Call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it's 1:34 p.m. on Friday, March 13th, 2026. Present today are Co-Chairman Schrage, Co-Chairman Foster, Representative Allard, Representative Jimmy, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Hannon. A lot of background noise here. We have Representative Galvin remotely in Anchorage and Representative Bynum remotely in Ketchikan. Representative Galvin is in Anchorage for the Anchorage yes. Town Hall this weekend. A number of us are flying there tonight. Also present today are House Finance Committee staff, Committee Assistant Helen Phillips, Paige Tulula-Lustufka, Secretary Bree Wiley, and Secretary Leah Frazier. We also have our moderator, Emily Mesh, from the Legislative Information Office. Before we start, please mute your cell phones. In today's meeting, we will have our final public testimony meeting on House Bill 263, the operating budget, and House Bill 265, mental health trust budget. Today's call-in locations are Anchorage, Mat-Su, and off-net. However, I encourage those who did not get the opportunity to testify Wednesday or Thursday to also call in today. You can call in from anywhere by dialing the following numbers. For the Juneau area, 907-586-9085. For Anchorage, 907-563-9085. For all other locations, 844-586-9085. We appreciate your time and testimony and patience, time and patience and testimony, and look forward to hearing your comments. Please note that public testimony is scheduled to end at 3:30 p.m. Testifiers may add themselves to the schedule until 3 p.m. when the schedule will close. If no one else is scheduled by 3 p.m., we will conclude public testimony for these locations. All callers who call in by 3 p.m. will be given a chance to testify. One more time, put yourself on the schedule, call the appropriate numbers for Juneau, 907-586-9085, Anchorage, 907-563-9085, all other locations, 844-586-9085. You'll also see those numbers displayed on screen whenever you are watching or streaming this hearing. When you come online, please essentially shut off the gavel broadcast so that we can get better reception. We also welcome written testimony on the operating budget. Written comments should be submitted to house.finance@akleg.gov by 5 p.m. this Friday, March 13th. Okay, with that, we'll get started. As a reminder, testimony is limited to 2 minutes per person. If a testifier surpasses the two-minute limit, I will politely ask them to conclude their testimony and move on to the next testifier. We have 25 people in the queue. Theoretically, that's 50 minutes. Of course, it's going to be a little more than that. So that should give you a sense of how long you might be waiting. So first, I'm going to I see one person in the room who I believe hasn't testified yet, and that's Rachel Miller. Ms. Miller, would you like to come forward and testify? We've been joined in the gallery by Representative Elam. Welcome, Representative Elam.
Good afternoon. Thank you. That was an expeditious start. For the record, my name is Rachel Miller. I'm the Chief Advocacy Officer at Food Bank of Alaska.
Welcome.
Thank you. For context, I have worked up here for over a decade in food security and food access issues, and I have over 20 years of experience in food security in various parts of the world. So I come to you today with some good context, historical knowledge, and want to convey that I chose Alaska on purpose because of our amazing opportunity and our community up here. And that's what I'm here today, is to communicate the needs of our greater community across the state. So today I'm speaking directly to the budget line item for $3 million for purchasing for food banks and pantries. I'm down here today in person to convey the seriousness and urgency of this ask. Food Bank of Alaska is located in Anchorage, but we work statewide with over 150 partners who distribute to our neighbors, many of whom are children, elders, seniors, veterans, and some of our most vulnerable demographics. So just to reiterate what I have said to many of you, 1 in 7 Alaskans experience hunger, and 1 in 5 kids. And some of our boroughs, for child hunger, that means almost or over 30% of a hunger rate for some of our kids. in rural Alaska. I often get the question, how much will it take to end hunger? We are tired of having this discussion, and, you know, we are too. The answer is, it's going to take a lot, and it's going to take all of us. We know the number of the hunger rates that we see are just the tip of the iceberg. We know there is a lot of hidden hunger in the state, and we know that it's going to take a lot more than $3 million to end hunger, but we also know that we only have so much capacity at Food Bank of Alaska, which is why $3 to $5 million for this budget line is appropriate and will be effectively used. Last year, we distributed over 10 million pounds of food, which equaled about 8.4 million meals across the state. And this was in response to chronic need that exists, which was amplified by the acute crises created by both Typhoon Halong and the federal government shutdown, which created a significant SNAP gap. Every month, Alaska spends about SNAP redemption in the state is about $26 million. So for every meal that our network puts out, SNAP provides 9. That is a gap that we simply cannot fill. So we work in partnership with critical programs that the state leverages. I do get a lot of questions around how we make distribution decisions. And I want to emphasize that we work directly with over 150 partners. We ask what communities need, and we listen to the responses on the ground. As an example of how we make our decisions, last fall we received $4 million in response to the federal government shutdown and the SNAP gap. And in that case, we worked with DPA to get the SNAP disbursement rates in different boroughs. So in because the money was in response to the SNAP gap, we looked at where the rates were, and we proportionately distributed to address that. So that's one example of how we make our decisions. And of course, localized disasters like Typhoon Halong, as well as regular seasonal, we have water access issues every breakup season, and we respond to those too. I know I only have 2 minutes. I will re-underline that this is critical funding for us. If we do not have this discussion today and this does not make it in the budget, we will likely have this discussion in the next year, because we have had this discussion at least once a year for the past 4 years. And every year it's been a scramble. Every year we have to figure out where the money will come from. This funding will let us more efficiently buy food. It will let us leverage economies of scale to buy more in bulk, and it will let us pre-stage food to be more efficient in responding to disaster at the end of the road and beyond. So thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Miller. Question from Rep. Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Joseph. So Ms. Miller, you spoke to $3 million in the budget. Can you tell me, is that in the DCCED budget as a direct grant to food banks, or is it in the DPA budget and in public assistance?
I'm recalling the DPA budget. I'm going to defer to the chair.
I think it's in the DOH budget, which is DPA.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Staff and then Allard.
Yeah. Thank you, Coach Justin, through the chair to Ms. Miller. Hey, thanks for your testimony. So I guess my question to you is, so when we started this appropriation for the food banks, it was under the specific temporary purpose of we had a SNAP backlog crisis. And this is now, with every year we talk about this, this is looking more like a thing that we're spending money on every year, right? And I know that when I voted to do this, it was for a specific purpose that was time sensitive. So my question to you is, are food banks in Alaska becoming reliant on this appropriation from the state, through the chair?
Ms. Miller.
Thank you for the question, through the chair. To Rep. Stapp, I appreciate the critical eye to this funding. Could you repeat?
Thank Coach Justin, through the chair. So my question is, are food banks in Alaska becoming reliant on receiving this grant from the state?
Ms. Miller,
yes.
Please.
Thank you, through the chair. I think that reliance might not be the word here. It is certainly, it makes our job easier. We are, our primary source of funding for us at Food Bank of Alaska is a variety of grant and program funding. If we don't have this $3 million, we will continue to serve Alaska. This will make it easier, and it will decrease the administrative burden that we need to do to figure out where to get more funding to feed the people we're going to feed anyway. I'll stop there.
Representative Allard.
Thank you. thank you for what you do. I think it's really important through the chair. I think it's really important. I appreciate that. I just wanted to express that to start off with. But I'm going to kind of do a follow-up with what Representative Stapp. It sounds like, no, you could do this on your own. That's what it sounded like to me. How much did you raise prior to getting the state assistance and then or government assistance? And then how much did you raise? How much did you fail to not fail? That's probably a harsh word. How much did you not get because you relied more on the government to do this for you? So kind of trying to figure out, okay, so when we started it, it was at a dollar amount you were bringing in, and then there was this little snafu with SNAP, and now we're assisting you guys. So what is it that you raised, that you didn't raise that you normally would have, but you said it made it easier, so.
Ms. Miller.
Did I clarify it? Well, it's okay, Chair, I got it.
No, I understood the question, but if you don't know the answer, you don't know the answer. And I'm not – you decide whether you know the answer.
That's why I asked her. She is the
– Okay.
Please.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair. Thank you, everyone, for the questions mm-hmm. and clarification. I don't have direct numbers on that.
Okay.
I think it's important to say that when I say we're going to keep doing what we're doing anyway, what I mean is Food Bank of Alaska has been around since 1979, and we have figured out how to feed communities. Okay. We have walked in partnership with the Division of Public Assistance for many, many years.
Right.
We do depend on our state partnerships to serve communities. And that can look like a variety of things, and it looks different in different crises. So funding for shipping and transportation is critical. We could not do what we do without assistance in that respect because it is so expensive to serve, especially non-bypass communities. The other factors that are affecting us and why this funding is so critical is we get a lot of our food from grocery donation, but grocery is becoming much more efficient. So we are getting fewer donations, and so we need to purchase more food. So that is a new thing that food banks across the nation are experiencing. And again, I'll reiterate, for every meal that we put out, SNAP provides 9. And so this is really a patchwork quilt to figure out how to feed Alaskans every day.
Can I just do a little quick follow-up clarification,
please? You can,
please?
But we now have 35 Alaskans calling in, and we've been with Ms. Miller, who is an expert in the field, for over 5 minutes.
Okay. So last year we gave you quite a bit. Could you tell me, do you know the – and I'll make it easier. Do you know the difference of what you would have raised versus – because you said, okay, what we could have raised, but maybe we didn't. Was there a shortage of raising last year versus what you normally raise?
Was the short through the chair. I don't think that's an apples to apples comparison or the right formula.
Now, I'll talk to you afterwards. Fine.
I'm here all night.
Well, okay. It'll be easier to clarify my questioning to you.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I appreciate it.
Sure. A couple things that I know is that, first of all, the food bank asked me to give it $5 million, and my committee gave it $3 million. That's fact number one. Also, this isn't just a SNAP-related phenomenon.
Correct.
Connected to the government shutdown. During the COVID period, there was all sorts of clamor and need for food banks. In fact, we had a lengthy dispute on the House floor in my time here because the MATSU felt relegated in some way, that it was about pallets and space and control of food. And I'm not saying the MATSU was wrong. I'm just saying these debates over state participation in food banks go back many years. All right. We're going to go on to the next caller, or the first caller, and that is Vanessa Liston Cunningham. Ms. Liston Cunningham.
Hello. My name is Vanessa Liston Cunningham. Before I start, I would like to thank everybody that is here today for the hard work that you folks do. Very quickly, I know I only have 2 minutes. I'm 64-year resident. I have 3 generations I have produced that stay in Alaska. I'm here because I got that call that everybody gets. My son was in a car accident as a passenger, arrived at Providence DOA. As a result of that, I ended up losing everything, and I take care of him, 24-hour care. I can't pay my bills. I'm on the borderline of losing my home, which is the only thing I have. But this is not the real story. The real story is this. In all of the thinking that goes on with everybody, they don't realize that when they don't address the caregiver and they don't give attention to the people that take care of the people, then the people have to go back into an institution or they go back to a medical facility. So the care that I am putting out for my son, 27 years with no days off, is minimal to what will happen if I quit. I go to bed at night. worrying that I'm going to die. He will end up in a facility. The facility then will double or triple the cost. And nobody will sit in front of you and negotiate that. It will just be a fact. And so when we talk about the budget, I don't know that you guys put that into consideration, as you don't address the caregiver. And the caregiver is what prevents these people from costing the state a lot of money. The majority of caregivers don't even get a fair wage in order to support themselves. And that's why I haven't had a day off in 27 years, because I can't afford out of pocket to get help. And I'm only limited with what the state will allow me to have. It's important to me that we have a voice on the board with the committee that we have in put in for HP 197, I think. I don't know. I'm just a mom. It's very important that we have a voice so that somebody for the first time, actually over the past 4 years, you've heard our voice. But up until then, I've been 27 years with no voice. It's important that we are on a committee in order to be able to have voice and also be able to give understanding to what we're doing. The other thing is critical, and I understand our times right now are very tough. I can't buy food. I'm about to lose my house. Costs of living have gone way up. And if we don't receive money in the fund, we're going to lose the caregivers. People are going to go into institutions. Cost of care will rise. And I think that if everybody would put that in their minds and know that what I'm saying is very true, I have spent 27 years saving the state of Alaska a lot of money. I'm asking now today that the state of Alaska think about the people. I represent myself, but there are lots of people out there in the same boat that I'm in. I'd like to thank you for listening to me today. This is such very heartful feelings that I'm giving you. I'm giving you my soul. And this is so important to me because one day I'm not going to be here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Liston Cunningham, for your important testimony. We're now going to go to Essie Frank in Fairbanks.
Hi, my name is Essie Frank. Hi, my name is Essie Frank.
Yes, we hear you.
I'm in Fairbanks, Alaska. I've been a caregiver for 30 plus years. I take care of my mother and my daughter, also other clients in the community. And I'm here to ask you guys to help us pass through HB 96 so that caregivers do have a say in our clients' care, as well as also being able to help fund everything that goes into us being caregivers. It has been very hard. Rent's increased, food's increased, and our pay isn't increased, you know, so we struggle. The struggle is real. Life's lifing. And I'm just here for you guys to please hear us and help us pass HB 96. Thank you for listening to me today.
Thank you, Ms. Frank. Appreciate your testimony. We'll now go to Melody Caden in Wasilla. Ms. Caden.
Hi, my name is Melody Caden. I'm in Wasilla, Alaska. I have lived in the Matanuska Assistant Borough for over 18 years, and I have worked in multiple assisted living homes and actual in-home care facilities, as well as in-home care. And I provide dayhab, respite, supported living, chore, for at least six people. I started off doing this by taking care of my relative, who was my mother. Then my uncle got hurt. He needed care, so we needed to help him. The state didn't even have anything to be able to help us out or to be able to give him a caregiver, to be able to help himself to be better. I enjoy doing my job, and I really like being able to go inside people's homes and providing this care and knowing that this isn't just a job for me. This isn't just a career. It's more of a lifestyle that I have chosen because I'm passionate about caring for people. And I know that one day I'm going to be in this situation when I get old. Now, I feel like if we could just if you guys at the House Committee could pass this law or this bill, it would be more helpful for us in our community to be able to keep more people inside of their homes instead of putting them inside of these assisted living homes that will or potentially those people get forgotten and lost in. They can't do all the same amenities as they would want to do like they would do if they were at home. And I feel like this is one of those things where it should be brought to the attention in the forefront, because your family member is going to be inside this situation at some point in time, or maybe you who's sitting in that chair is going to be in the situation, and you're going to want somebody to care and love you and not be able to take away from that. So I feel that you guys should really pass these bills when it comes to the mental health and the budget for the caregivers, because that helps us be able to pay for our bills and be able to get these people out into the world and be able to help them thrive rather for them to regress, because that's what we're looking at.
Okay.
And I take this straight from my heart. So I appreciate you guys listening to me and taking an accountability for this, and I hope that you guys hear all of us and this bill actually gets passed.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Caden. We appreciate it. We're now going to go to Lucy Tieford with the Anchorage School District. Ms. Tieford.
Hello, Madam Co-Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, and members of the committee. Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Lucy Tieford. I'm from Anchorage, Alaska, and I'm representing the Anchorage School District. I'm calling to testify about the important recruitment and retention work being done by the Alaska Council of School Administrators and their School Leadership Academy and Educator Retention and Recruitment Center. In the Anchorage School District, recruitment and retention remain ongoing challenges, particularly in specialized areas, high-need schools, and hard-to-fill content areas. The scale of Anchorage School District alone adds complexity to this issue, as we're the largest school district in the state, and staffing stability directly impacts thousands of students in Anchorage. Programs like the Alaska School Leadership Academy Principal Mentoring, ASD is now participating in this program, and the new and incoming Superintendent Coaching Program strengthen leadership capacity. In a district our size, strong school leadership is directly connected to staff retention, school climate, and student outcomes. Supporting principals and district leaders ultimately supports classrooms. The funding for ACSA helps ASD remain competitive in recruiting educators, strengthens our onboarding and retention systems, and builds leadership stability across our schools. Continued investment in this work makes a tangible difference for our students and staff. Thank you for your consideration today.
Thank you, Ms. Tieford. We appreciate your testimony. We'll now go, and I'm taking these just as they come on my device here. We're now going to go to Crystal Howard in Wasilla. Ms. Howard. Ms. Howard, are you with us? All right. If you've been dropped for some reason, Ms. Howard, we encourage you to call back in. We're going to go now to Crystal Richardson, also in Wasilla. Ms. Richardson.
Hello?
Yes, Ms. Richardson, is that you?
My name is Crystal Richardson. I live in Wasilla, and I am a caregiver to my daughter who has special needs, and I'm her only voice, and I'm the only one that takes care of her from my family. Her and I have a special bond, and in order for me to help her, I need to be able to be her caregiver, and in order for me to help her, since she is my job, I'm asking for the committee to keep keeping money into the budget for caregivers. Our job is 24/7. If no days off, we don't get retirement. We don't get sick days. So we're on call 24/7 on holidays, on weekends, in the middle of the night. And if we're not there, then the people that we're taking care of don't get the care that they need. They fall through the cracks. They get forgotten. And I'm just asking you to keep these people in mind while you're going through the budget and keeping healthcare workers, child care providers, caregivers on the budget. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Richardson. Appreciate your testimony. We'll now go to Les Guerra. Mr. Guerra.
Hi. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. I want to thank the committee for its work on making sure foster youth have a fair chance in life. The work has been strong to date, and so I support the current budget on foster care. You know, it's been 8 years since the legislature passed major reforms to make sure kids have a chance in this world. The bulk of those reforms, the most important ones, have still not been implemented by the Office of Children's Services. And a 2025 legislative audit has brought a lot of that to light. So with this information, I really appreciate the legislature has started to act. I'll just mention a couple of the problems that are major that this budget addresses. And again, I'll state my appreciation. We have lost since 2018, when we passed this reform, 500 foster homes. So kids are living in hotels, they're living in bunk beds in offices, or paying caseworkers who are already overstressed to sleep in offices with these children and spending a lot of money that we shouldn't be spending, causing a lot of heartache that shouldn't be caused. In 2020, the OCS, to save money, also because of COVID, but since to save money, eliminated the qualifications for its caseworkers. So there's no social work degree required. There's no experience in the area of foster care that's required. There's no experience at all relevant to foster care that's required. And training, which are required by law to be 6 weeks, has now gone very substantially to virtual training. That combination of taking away qualifications for our caseworkers and reducing the training for them has been called in the audit woefully insufficient to protect children. That is not the direction we should be going. OCS has been proposing cuts to the training budget, and that's, I think, why they have stayed done so much virtual work. They've cut roughly $260,000 from the training budget and state funds, adjusted for real dollars, about $500,000 has been cut from the training budget. The legislature addresses all of these things in this current budget. I do appreciate it a ton. And I would just leave the legislature with the committee with one other thing. One of the best things we can do for foster youth while they wait to be reunited with their families or adopted is to place them in homes with, if they have loving relatives that can take care of them. That is such an opportunity. Much of the law that we passed to require that and increase the number of relative homes has also not been followed by OCS. And I will withhold my frustration with a chart that OCS presents in committee showing checks that shows how much OCS has complied with the 2018 laws. And many of those checks should not be there. But I appreciate the committee's work. What you are doing is meaningful and will go a long ways towards helping people.
Thank you, Representative. Appreciate the testimony. May see you this weekend.
Okay.
Representative Guerra is from Anchorage. I'm positive of that.
Great.
So we'll go to Jacqueline Elton next.
Hello.
Hi, my name is Jacqueline Elton, and I am from the Anchorage area. I am a mother of a child with disabilities, and I am on the line now to testify about multiple issues. The first issue being the issues being faced by the school district. Special education as a whole is in terrible danger. And although my daughter is not considered to be a regular student, she has high levels of need and is in a life skills program, she still deserves to attend school as a whole. She deserves to have a future that is bright and sociable. And I would like the committee to remember that. I'm also here to speak about the need for higher compensation for caregivers. Currently on Tutor, there is a sign at Wendy's that states that they are paying people $18.50 an hour to start. That's $18.50. And caregivers start off around $15 to $16. I would say that caregiving as a whole is much more important of a job than providing fast food, even though people who provide fast food deserve a living wage as well. But how are we continuously asking people to put themselves at risk because the emotional labor of caregiving and the physical labor of caregiving is much higher than lots of jobs? So how do you continuously ask these people to put themselves on the line every single day and put themselves in circumstances where somebody could potentially be hurt and they be the person responsible for that situation if we can't pay them a wage that they can pay their bills with? How is that fair? How is that right? It's not. Something has to be done. So I'm asking, one, that the living wage be met for caregivers, if not better. And I'm asking that you guys support House Bill 96, and I'm asking that you give caregivers a voice in the state arena so people can hear them and know what's going on. At some point in life, everyone will need a caregiver, regardless if it's due to injury or age or whatever have you. You're going to need them at some point. And let me tell you right now, because I do have an elderly parent, to put somebody in a nursing home, the one across the street from St. Patrick's Church off of Tudor, is $6,000 a month. And that is before any medical services. That is for the facility alone. Letting my daughter live in my home with me, not letting her, I love her, but having my daughter live at home with me is saving the state thousands of dollars a month. Thousands. And that's without Medicaid, because our Medicaid system is so backed up that I can't get my daughter on Medicaid. It's 8 hours on the telephone to wait to have an appointment with somebody who may or may not be able to help me. And that's if I don't have to go to work or I don't have any of my children with me. What are we doing as a state? It's very confusing right now. If we cannot take care of the least of us, I don't understand what the plan is for the future. So my ask is that we support our future and we support the people who cannot speak for themselves. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Sultan. Appreciate your testimony. Next, we'll have testimony from Trevor Storrs, President and CEO, Alaska Children's Trust. Mr. Storrs.
Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Trevor Storrs, President and CEO of the Alaska Children's Trust. The Trust is the statewide lead organization focused on the prevention of child abuse and neglect, and we believe that when Alaska's families have the knowledge, skills, supports, and resources to thrive, we can prevent child abuse and neglect. One program that helps families thrive is the Alaska Infant Learning Program, ILP. Thank you for supporting the expansion of ILP services from a 50% to 25% developmental delay. We were overjoyed to see the legislature make this increment in FY26, and we're asking you to take the same step again. Please keep this commitment in FY27 by increasing funding for ILP expansion in the Department of Health by $5.72 million. By supporting this investment, you will also be taking a step towards reducing costs and long-term budget sustainability. 46% of children who receive early intervention do not need special education services by kindergarten. Additionally, 36% of those children reported no longer experiencing disability. Each child who avoids special education saves the state nearly $230,000 per year. Within a couple of years, we would recoup this initial investment, and within a few years, save approximately $35 million annually, a 400% return on investment. According to Kids Count, the number of children in Alaska experiencing a disability increased 48% from 2014 to 2023. This investment does not only feed the line, but begins to shorten it. And in line with supporting early childhood programs, we also support the following investments: $7.5 million for annual Roots Award, the $3.756 for Head Start, the $500,000 for Parents as Teachers, $400,000 for Best Beginnings Imagination Library, and inflation-proofing measures to the base student allocation. Thank you for this opportunity. And again, thank you for all that you do for our children and family.
Thank you, Mr. Storrs. Hope to see you this weekend. We'll now go to Matthew Higgins in Anchorage.
Hello, I'm Matthew Higgins from Anchorage, Alaska, and I'm the father of a disabled child. I ask you to keep additional money from the budget for caregivers. Caregivers deserve to have a livable wage in Alaska. They cannot be expected to work the hours for as little as they are paid. And as of right now, we are unable to find help caring for our daughter because of the lack of adequate compensation for our caregivers. Caregivers need to have competitive compensation and livable wages. And so I ask that you keep adding budgets for them and keep it stable. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins, for your testimony. We'll now go to Megan McBride. Ms. McBride.
Hello, thank you. Hello, thank you. I grew up in Anchorage, and I attended public schools here from kindergarten until I graduated high school. And I'm now the parent of two children. The oldest is in kindergarten, and he is learning how to read this year, and it's just amazing. I'm so impressed with the educators and staff at his school. And I'm here testifying today because I'm concerned that our state is driving our amazing public education system into the ground from where it was at when I was a student here. We used to attract best educators in the country would travel to Alaska to work here, and now many are leaving, and the rest are overworked because so much has been cut from our district's budgets. Our teachers and students are really feeling the burden. So I'm asking you to prioritize education funding in the budget this year and every year. Other departments start out the budgeting process by submitting baseline budgets based on their actual expenses and needs, but education is tied to an arbitrary base student allocation, and this has resulted in years of underfunding. Our districts are making impossible choices to try to balance their budgets. Many are facing dangerous deferred maintenance and high turnover of staff. Our schools are starving and our students are suffering. And I did some math and figured out that to restore the buying power schools had in 2011, we would need to increase the base student allocation by $1,400 this year. I support the proposed 630 increase by House Education. That's a good start. And I want to point out that the legislature's own budget has increased 42% since 2017, while education has decreased in that time period.
And state spending on corrections has gone up 54% since 2019, and education has gone up only 12%, and that's not adjusted for inflation. Schools do need to have good performance, but they can't do so without good resources. So please adjust the education budget this year and every year. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McBride. Appreciate your testimony. We'll now go to Julia Louie, President and CEO of Volunteers of America, Alaska. Ms. Louie, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great. Thank you, Chair and members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Julia Louie, President and CEO of VOA Alaska, and I appreciate the legislature's attention to adolescent behavioral health services in this year's budget. The addition of $336,000 for adolescent residential behavioral health treatment is an important step forward, addressing one of the most significant gaps in Alaska's behavioral health system. This funding helps bring reimbursement for adolescent residential substance use treatment closer to parity with adult residential rates and provides critical stabilization for providers serving youth. Youth are simply not small adults. Adolescent residential programs require developmentally appropriate care that includes education during treatment, family engagement, coordination with systems like OCS and Division of Juvenile Justice, and higher levels of supervision and safety staffing. Despite these additional requirements, youth programs have historically been reimbursed at the same or lower rates than adult residential services. The Department of Health is currently working with providers and their contractor, Guidehouse, to better understand the true cost structure of adolescent residential care and develop a youth-specific rate methodology. The funding in the health budget helps stabilize these services while that important work continues. Investing earlier in young people improves outcomes and reduces the cost we see later in adult behavioral health systems, corrections, and lives lost when intervention comes too late. In Alaska, 1 in 4 young people report attempting suicide, and we must do better. Thank you for your time and your commitment to Alaska's youth.
Thank you, Ms. Louie. Appreciate your testimony and your good work. We'll now go to Sherry Lips in Anchorage. Ms. Lips.
Hello, and thank you. My name is Sherry Lips, and I do live here in Anchorage. I'm calling to ask the House Finance Committee to include the early childhood budget investments in the operating budget. These items are essential to supporting Alaska's youngest children and the families who care for them. I'm here to support the $7.5 million for the annual Roots Award, $5.72 million for the infant learning, $500,000 for the parents and teachers, $400,000 for Best Beginnings Imagination Library, and $3.75 million for Head Start. I want to emphasize together these programs strengthen families, stabilize the workforce, and support babies and toddlers during their most important years of development. As a mom, a grandmother, an auntie, and a businesswoman, I especially want to highlight the Imagination Library, which provides families with high-quality books every month from birth to age 5. This simple, proven program helps build early literacy, supports parent-child bonding, and improves school readiness across communities of every size. These 5 investments work together to ensure more Alaskan children enter kindergarten ready to learn, read, and thrive. Please include all 5 items at these funding levels in HB 263. Thank you for your time and your commitment to Alaska's children and families.
Thank you, Ms. Lips. Appreciate your testimony. We'll now go to Jordan Head, Executive Director of Bristol Bay Science and Research. Jordan.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Jordan Head. I'm the Executive Director of the Bristol Bay Science and Research Institute. We're a nonprofit research organization based in Dillingham that works closely with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game to support science and monitoring behind Bristol Bay salmon management. I want to express support for the $400,000 increment added by the Fish and Game Committee for the Port Muller test fishery in the ADF&G operating budget. Since 2022, industry, fishermen, and regional partners have contributed about $400,000 annually to keep the Port Muller test fishery operating. The Port Muller test fishery has continuously operated since 1967, sampling sockeye salmon runs offshore before fish reached the fishing districts in Bristol Bay, providing early information on run strength and destination to managers, giving them the critical information to meet escapement goals and distribute harvest across Bristol Bay's nine river systems. Restoring this funding to the operating budget will allow these regional contributions to be redirected towards Chinook salmon assessment work, which is urgently needed now that the Nuchigak king salmon were designated a stock of management concern in 2023. The situation traces back to 2017 when the Bristol Bay Fisheries Collaborative was created as a partnership between ADF&G and BBSRI after budget cuts reduced funding for key management tools. At that time, stakeholders stepped in and raised between $750,000 to $1 million annually through 2021 to maintain these programs, with the understanding that this would be a temporary bridge until those essential tools could be restored to the state operating budget. This increment does exactly that. It restores the monitoring programs necessary to manage Bristol Bay sustainably while allowing regional partners to invest more heavily in Chinook salmon research and conservation. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Head. We'll now go to Fred Becker with the Matsu Food Bank. Mr. Becker.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call, Chair and members. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the food experts that took the time to come to Juneau with Food Bank of Alaska as the partners we have. I'm speaking to you today in my role as Executive Director of the Matsu Food Bank and ask for your support in protecting the $3 million allocation for food banks and pantries currently included in the state budget. Across Alaska, food insecurity remains a very real challenge for thousands of our families. Here in the Matsu Valley, the Matsu Food Bank and partners have seen more neighbors seeking help at any time in recent years in 2025 and again in our first 2 months of 2026. In 2025 alone, the Matsu Food Bank Betty White Food Pantry distributed 2.3 million pounds of food to our neighbors directly in need. There was an increase by over 100% from 2023. The Matsu Food Bank also distributed 312,000 pounds of food to about our 30 partner agencies in the Matsu Valley, an increase over 2023 by over 400%. This $3 million investment in food security is one of the most effective ways the state of Alaska and the House Finance can strengthen Alaska's emergency food system. This will help our food banks throughout the state purchase food when donations fall short and in advance of any emergency, which will help decrease the costs and get food to us in a timely manner. It was mentioned earlier that the SNAP debacle that happened in November, I personally ordered a 20-pallet container of food, and I just recently, yesterday, received those that pallets. That's how long it takes and how costly it is to get it to the state of Alaska. So the Matsu Food Bank provides an essential safety net when people experience job loss, medical expenses, or other unexpected hardships. We have seen our daily counts of individuals we serve by over 30% year over year, and we have expanded our services to include Friday nights and Saturdays, based off our feedback showing that there were working families that had been unable to obtain our services during our work week. This resulted in a 65% new client on those days. And we will now maintain a Saturday throughout the year to get those folks that are just going paycheck to paycheck. And I can give you a hundred different stories of the people I've spoken to and the lives that we've changed over the past 2 years that I've been the executive director of Matsu Food Bank. I respectfully ask for your support in ensuring that this funding remains in the final budget, and I thank you all for your continued support of your communities, my communities, and our neighbors in Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Becker. We'll now go to Evie McNamee in Wasilla. Ms. McNamee.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi, my name is Evie McNamee, and I was so pleased to be able to meet most of you this week. I was in this last flow of caregivers that came in. I'm the lady with the purple cast on that got the chance to talk to some of you. And I wanted to thank you for seeing us, and I wanted to please beg of you to keep the additional money in the budget for caregivers. I personally take care of a Down syndrome child, and to be able to come down and talk to you, I had to beg and borrow and plead with somebody to come in to take care of her while I was gone, because there's nobody down here. I don't have resources down here to get somebody that is qualified to come in and take care of her. So when I go back, I don't know what I'm going to go back into. Some days I go in there and she's sitting in her own feces and urine because there was nobody to care for her that night, and I wasn't able to. I am going to be 70 this year. She is my dream job. I'm a retired nurse, and I never thought I'd go back, but once I met this little lady, I just love her to death, and I want her quality of life to be so much better. But when I get ill or when I have an accident, you know, I have to worry about whether she's going to be taken care of or not. And that money in there is going to help so much. It's going to bring up her quality of life. It's going to help me. I go and I spend a lot of money filling in the gaps that she doesn't have. She doesn't have quality food. She doesn't have clothes, you know, things like that. And we all do that, all of the caregivers down here. And you've heard all of our stories, and there's many, many more to come. So I want to thank you, and it was so great to meet you guys yesterday.
Thank you, Ms. McNamee. A purple cast does stand out in my mind.
Yeah, so, it does, doesn't it?
Yes. So we'll go on. Have a good weekend. We'll now go on to Jamie Liston, a caregiver in Wasilla. Miss Liston.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes. Mr. Liston.
Hi. My name is Jamie Liston. I'm a caregiver in the Mat-Su Valley. I care for my younger brother who suffered a traumatic brain injury about 27 years ago from a head-on car wreck up around Talkeetna. I also care for my stepson who was born with Angelman syndrome, who just turned 34 years old recently. Life has been very difficult living with their disabilities. They both require constant care and attention. And it's been especially difficult with the limited finances and resources. Through the years, I usually had to work a second job in order to make my ends meet. So, you know, the finances that we have allocated, we need to keep and hopefully bring more in the future. You know, we make it work because we're a family. But the future is scary with all the budget cuts and the cost of living increasing. You know, my brother and my son don't have a voice, so we have to advocate for them. And I realized that, you know, by taking care of them, we are saving the state a considerable amount of money, because if we're not here for them, they're going to have to go into assisted living, which is going to cost considerably more. So I ask that you continue with the finances that you have allocated and hopefully allocate more in the future. It will make a huge difference in their lives and all of our lives. So I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Liston. Appreciate your testimony. We're now going to go to Superintendent Jamie Burgess in Nome. Superintendent Burgess.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Thank you. My name is Jamie Burgess, and I'm the superintendent for Nome Public Schools. I am calling in today to speak to the operating budget, and I'm here to testify in support of the Alaska Education Recruitment and Retention Center, also known as ARC, and funding for the state of Alaska in the education budget. When I first became superintendent, the University of Alaska Fairbanks ran a platform known as the Alaska Teacher Placement, or ATP, which was funded through UAF and had one part-time employee. This platform posted all types of jobs for districts all across the state, and for many small rural districts, this was the major way we found candidates for open positions. ATP also sponsored the Anchorage Job Fair every year in March. As circumstances have shifted and funding dwindled from UAF, and we began finding the majority of our staffing through virtual job fairs and then through international hires, the Alaska Council of School Administrators recognized changing need for hiring and volunteered to take over that responsibility to support districts across Alaska, and ARC was born. ARC has provided invaluable support as districts struggle to find high-quality candidates and navigate the complex process of hiring international teachers. And Mount Public Schools has joined ARC in order to avail ourselves of this important human resources tool. I urge you to continue contributing funding toward ARC so that they may continue their crucial services, which support every district, especially those which are rural and smaller in size, and do not have the capacity to conduct on their own recruitment campaigns, outreach to college and universities across the United States, attend multiple virtual or in-person job fairs, or help centralize recruitment and hiring for the state of Alaska. ARC has become essential for many of us, and their loss would be devastating in an already high-stress environment for education. Again, I urge you to make sure that the funding for ARC remains in the operating budget for the coming year. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent. Appreciate your testimony. We'll now go to Sarah Krug in Anchorage. Sarah.
Hi, my name is Sarah Krug. I live in West Anchorage, and I've been a caregiver for over 20 years. I work in the Anchorage School District in special education and as a personal care provider for my son, Zachary. Zachary has cerebral palsy. He uses a power wheelchair to move and an iPad to talk. The cerebral palsy affects his movement, coordination, posture, speech, swallowing, even how he uses the bathroom, and so much more. His life depends on specialized care, therapy, medical equipment, and assistance. But he's also funny, smart, curious. He's a 20-year-old young man who loves music, people, animals, jokes. He's a super senior at Diamond High School. And with hours and caregivers, he can survive and thrive in this Anchorage community. And I just want to remind people that Zach wants to be a part of this community. And he doesn't want to go in a group home. He doesn't want to be removed from his home. He wants good care providers. And so I'm just asking you guys to please remember to keep caregivers in mind in the budget. And I'm asking you to support more money in the budget for caregivers. And when HB 96 comes around, to support that, because people like Zachary matter and they're an essential part of our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Krug. Appreciate your work and your comments. We'll now go to Michelle Giroux, Executive Director of Hope Community Resources. Ms. Giroux.
Thank you, Chairman Josephson and members of the committee. I'm Michelle Giroux. I am the Executive Director of Hope Community Resources and the Board President for the Key Coalition of Alaska. And I'm going to use my 2 minutes today to advocate for the ILP funding that you all so generously put in the budget last year and worked really diligently to recognize the importance of expanding the eligibility for young children. There's such a great return on investment of this expansion, costing, allowing kids to move forward and costing less in special ed services and less in potential waiver costs down the road. It also, you know, that intervention enhances the strength of families, gives them the support that they need of those early years, and really is an incredible investment in our children and families. So again, last year you were so generous and wise to move this forward, and I know there are a lot of competing issues this year, but just want to add my voice that this priority is one of the top priorities for the Key Coalition Alaska in conjunction with the Governor's Council. And we really thank you for all of the things that you're balancing right now and hope that you continue to advocate for young children and expand the ILP eligibility. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Giroux. And just a quick note that there's lots of bipartisan support for expanding the ILP. There's a separate bill, and we, at least I, and a number of us were sort of, we're in the position of monitoring that bill for as a source of funding, although we're certainly consider the issue of bringing back a separate budget item. Just wanted you to know that.
Appreciate that. Thank you very much.
All right. So now we're going to go to Amber Manley in Big Lake. Ms. Manley.
This is Amber Manley. Can you hear me?
Yes. Please give us your name, any association.
Hi,
yes, go ahead.
I'm calling from Big Lake, Alaska today. I'm a mom. I am a caregiver, a business owner, a homeowner. And I see a need for home health care for all Alaskans that require services. I don't want to see our fellow Alaskans end up in facilities. I currently have zero clients. I lost three this year, and that has taken a toll on my my heart a little bit. But I do plan on having more clients, and I would like, you know, there to be money for those clients, even if they're not my clients. I think it's important that we remember that healthcare is such a wide word. A lot falls under healthcare, right? You've got your home healthcare, and you've got your VA care, and there's many different aspects that go into care for a human. But whether the money goes into one department or another, it's important that we have that money available for care. So that's really why I'm calling today, is maybe to open up a picture of what the word health care or the budget for health care specifically, in such a general word, how many categories actually fall under that? And maybe looking at the different areas that fall all under healthcare, we might agree that it is a priority to every Alaskan.
Okay.
So with that, I will leave you. I just want to ask you to please consider taking time to think of all those different categories that fall under healthcare, and remember that healthcare, and especially home healthcare, is a matter of life or death. I appreciate your time, and thank you for all you do.
Thank you, Ms. Manley. I've certainly heard that argument before, that healthcare encompasses more than we might think at first blush. So now we'll go to Mildred Parker in Anchorage. Ms. Parker.
Yes, thank you so much for this opportunity. Yes, my name is Mildred Parker, and I've been in the early childhood field for 27 years. I'm currently the Alaska System for Early Education Development Manager at THRED, and I'm calling to ask you to prioritize childcare in the FY27 budget and include annual funding for the Retaining Our Outstanding Teachers Roots Retention Award. Alaska families need reliable child care, but programs are struggling to stay open, and early educators are leaving because pay is too low and the work is not sustainable. Many child care educators earn low wages and struggle to support their own families. And the Roots Award is a recruitment and retention stipend that helps programs keep staff, stabilize classrooms for children, and prevent more closures. It also supports quality by increasing stipends based on training and professional development. Strong child care means a strong economy, and the Roots Award is the next critical step legislators can take to support our child care system statewide. This incentivizes quality care when child's brain development is at its most critical stage, helping young Alaskans prepare the skills and knowledge to be ready for kindergarten. Please protect recent progress, help stabilize the early educator workforce, and support child care capacity for Alaska families and employers. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Parker. Appreciate your testimony. We'll now go out to Bethel And Aaron Haviland, superintendent.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Aaron Haviland, and I'm the Assistant Superintendent of Human Resources and Student Services for the Lower Kuskokwim School District in Bethel. I'd like to offer testimony regarding the ACSA and ARC contract. As you know, LKSD serves 27 schools across the vast and remote region of Western Alaska, and recruitment and retention of educators continues to be one of our most significant challenges. Each year, we work to ensure that every classroom has a qualified teacher, but doing so requires a tremendous amount of effort. Recruiting educators to remote communities often means conducting national and even international searches. International hiring alone can take months as we navigate visa processes, certification requirements, and relocation logistics before a teacher can even arrive in our state. For example, we regularly begin recruitment many months before the school year starts, and even then, we are sometimes still filling positions well into the summer. Organizations like ARC provide critical support in helping rural districts recruit and hire teachers. Their outreach helps connect districts like ours with candidates we might not otherwise reach, which ultimately helps us place qualified educators in classrooms where they are urgently needed. Equally important is leadership support. Programs like the ASLA Principal Mentoring and the new and incoming Superintendent Coaching Program helps ensure that new leaders are supported as they take on incredibly complex roles in rural districts. Strong school leadership is essential for retaining staff and maintaining stability in our schools. For districts like LKSD, these partnerships make a real difference in helping us recruit, support, and retain the educators our students deserve. Thank you for your time and your support of our students.
Thank you, Superintendent. Appreciate it very much. We'll now go to Deborah Adams with the Alzheimer Association of Alaska. Ms. Adams.
Yeah, good afternoon. My name is, thank you, Chair Josephson, for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Deborah Adams. I'm a resident of Cordova and a board member of the Alzheimer's Association of Alaska. I'm here to support the $1.5 million increment for adult daycare services in the state budget. And briefly, this is important to me as someone who cared for a husband with dementia. I spent 5 years caring for him while holding a full-time job, and he passed away in 2017. It was especially hard because there was no adult daycare in Cordova, and there still is no daycare, adult daycare option in Cordova. And Cordova is one of the underserved communities, and as an Alzheimer's advocate, I can attest to the need for adult daycare in Cordova. There are approximately 11,000 people in Alaska right now with dementia throughout the state, and 7 million, the number just went up, in the country. So it is a need. Adult daycare not only supports elders and adults with disabilities, but family caregivers who rely on them. There are approximately 25,000 caregivers in the state of Alaska who are caring for dementia patients. And I'm listening to all the other testimony from people. There are different caregivers taking care of their family members with special needs and illnesses as well. Alaska's population is aging, and the demand for these services is going to continue to grow. And so I think that it's critical that we pay attention to the need now. So I thank you for your time and consideration, and I hope that the increment does go through. So thank you again.
Thank you, Ms. Adams. I appreciate your passion for this issue. We'll go now to Maureen Tyskovich. Maureen. Maureen, I can already tell that we're not hearing you well. Maureen? Is there any way on your end to improve the audio?
Hello?
Yes. Maureen, are you on speakerphone?
Hello.
Yes. Maureen Tyskovich?
Yes, that's me.
Okay.
I am...
Go ahead.
...trying to get out of here. I am a caregiver for my son who has a rare genetic disorder. And my concern is when I go to bed at night, because I'm 68, I wonder what's going to happen to him in the future. 7 group homes here in Anchorage, in the Anchorage area, have closed in the past 2 years due to staffing issues. They can't hire enough caregivers to staff their facilities, and then they don't meet regulations, and they have to close. Then those occupants in the home have to suddenly be emergency placed in another group home setting. And I just see that it's going to get worse and worse. Recently, my 84-year-old mother-in-law is in this position. They're suggesting she go home and get personal care attendants. And I'm like, there's none to be had. People don't want to wipe butts for $17 an hour. So they don't even want to work at McDonald's if you've ever been through a drive-thru recently and it takes 20 minutes to get up to the front. So that's part of why I'm calling today, is to see if you'll pass more money to be able to go and support caregivers into making a livable wage, and that people like myself who are dependent on this system can sleep at night knowing that there are going to be future workers who have ability to pay their rent and their housing and their insurance off of the funds that are provided. I just really appreciate all the efforts that you guys do to try to figure out how to work a budget. I don't envy you the job, but I just wanted to let you know that there are real people behind every one of your decisions, and they don't go away because the money's not in the budget. So I hear people saying that they don't want their loved ones to have to go into a facility of some sort, but I'm here to say the facilities are starting to go away. So I just hope that for the sake of everybody, that we can add the funding to make it a constant instead of every year having to come back and hold our cups out saying, please, please let our children have staff that can care and love them. Thank you so much, and I hope you get some sunshine.
Thank you, Maureen. We appreciate your testimony. We're now going to go to Tonda Linden in Big Lake.
Hi. Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Tonda. I'm from Big Lake, and I've been a caregiver for 23 years. I initially got into this field due to a family member becoming very ill. Today, I'm here to represent caregivers and Alaska's most vulnerable that are currently being failed by a broken system. We are in a state of emergency. Right now, our community, Alaskans are going without showers, home-cooked meal, and basic medical care. This isn't just a staffing shortage. It's systematic neglect. Because we don't pay a living wage to our worker pool, it is evaporating. We are literally watching people suffer because the math of survival does not add up, and caregivers are struggling. Currently in the state of Alaska, one ambulance ride is $1,200. A basic nursing home, $30,000 minimum a month. A home care worker is a fraction of that cost. The current average wage for a care worker is $16 to $19 an hour. That does not meet the lowest $3,000 plus monthly living cost expense for Alaskans. We can either invest more now, or we can pay 10 times more later in ER visits and hospitalizations and institutions. There's a saying that I heard from a family member. A senator cannot be a senator without their staff. A doctor cannot provide care without its support team. And by underfunding caregivers, you are asking us to function without our hands and feet. This is a life or death situation.
This is not about that there isn't enough money in the budget for caregivers. It is that Alaskans most vulnerable are not being prioritized over things like AI. And it's time to get serious and prioritize our budget responsibly. I am asking you to please add more money for this and every year for caregivers in Alaska before we are standing by and watching our own fall off and die one by one. Thank you so very much for your time today and hearing my testimony.
Thank you, Ms. London. We'll now go to Lorraine Thomas in Anchorage with the Alzheimer's Association. Ms. Thomas.
Good afternoon, committee. Thank you for giving me the time to speak today. My name is Lorraine Thomas. I am a board member of the Alzheimer's Association of Alaska, and I'm here to support the $1.5 million increment for adult day services in the state budget. I value this because I myself was a caregiver and in the village for my mom, and I had no place to take her while I had to go to work as a health provider. And I would have to go and check on her in between patients. And that was really difficult to do until she passed. And having these daycares and communities, even in the hubs, would be greatly needed. Existing centers are struggling with inflation, workforce turnover, and increased demand. Adult daycare services support not just seniors and adults with disabilities, but the family caregivers who rely on them. Increased funding would allow grantees to serve more Alaskans across urban and rural communities. And as Alaska's population ages, the demand for these services will only grow. I want to thank you, Chair Josephson, and the members of the committee for the time and consideration. I urge you support for this increment. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Thomas. We'll now go to Dakota Minnick in Wasilla. Dakota.
Hey, my name is Dakota. I'm a caregiver from Wasilla, and what I'm asking is that you keep money in the budget for caregiving. I take care of a disabled war veteran who depends on me for all his basic needs, which allows him to remain living at his home in his community. I love my client and job, but the pay has me struggling to get by and considering better paying jobs, which would mean my client, a disabled war veteran, risks getting sent to a nursing home for triple the cost. So I'm just asking that you keep the money in the budget for caregiving and just think about the caregivers. And thank you for hearing me.
Thank you, Dakota. Appreciate your testimony. We'll now go to Sasha Johnson.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Very well. Thank you. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, my name is Sasha Johnson. I am from Anchorage, Alaska. I am a caregiver, and I take care of my aunt, and she lives with me, and it is crucial that you take into consideration more funding for caregivers, because not only will I lose my home, she will lose her home. Her bills become my bills, and I have been taking care of her for the last 20 years after taking over from my mom. And I would ask you to please consider passing HB 96, which will give caregivers and their clients a voice and say in the goings on of all of this. And it sets up an advisory board. I would like to thank you for your time.
Thank you, Sasha. Appreciate that very much. We'll now go to Ann Rapoport in Anchorage.
Oh,
Hello. Thank you very much for this opportunity, committee, to speak as a very concerned resident, 47-year resident of Anchorage. I'm here to speak in support of HB 263, the operating budget, and all the additions it includes for very essential services and funding, including for our caregivers, our food bank, foster care, and education, among other needs. I just want to say ditto to everybody else who's testified before me with some very poignant and heartfelt testimony. I'm testifying for myself, and I was calling in specifically to address education funding for our children, our future, but there's all these other important issues too in the budget. I value education as we all should. In addition to approving this operating budget, I urge you to support HB 374, which would provide another increase to the base student allocation. The increase the legislature provided last year was long overdue and welcome, but it wasn't enough. We need to approve this increase and guarantee future increases tied to inflation. As you know, the BSA was stagnant for years and years, and this has helped it the last year increase, but it's not enough. There was an excellent opinion piece in ADN recently, two longtime teachers in Alaska who had both been teachers of the year in the past. One was a finalist for National Teacher of the Year. They grew up in Anchorage. They were raising their children here. But the loss of financial and leadership support for education, the erosion in the education we are providing our youth, the increased demands on our teachers with ever-increasing class sizes, and the lack of a decent retirement system all finally got to them. They're leaving Alaska. They are but two of the tremendous brain and talent drain we have been losing with the paltry funding and support provided for education for far too many years. My husband and I were fortunate to raise two kids in the Anchorage School District. They graduated in 2008 and 2011 after great education. They had the opportunity for enrichment programs like Ignite, for a wide range of sports, for art and music, and for reasonably sized classes where their teachers were not stressed. I'm so sad that so many of today's students are not able to have these same experiences and that we are stretching our teachers beyond what is decent. Please approve this budget, then approve HB 374 and the other bills you've heard about today to appropriately fund caregivers and the food bank and foster care and all these other essential programs for our people, Alaskans. Then get to work on some revenue measures. I know money's really tight, and that's why we need a progressive income tax. We need to tax S-corps. We need to tax online sales. We need to provide a retirement system for our teachers then. The current increase in oil prices is temporary. It might help us get through this year better, but do not let it distract you from implementing the revenue measures you need to implement. You get what you pay for. We Alaskans haven't paid for very much, and we're not getting much. Let's turn that around and make Alaska the truly special, amazing place it was when I came here over 46 years ago. With your allocating these funds and finding the necessary funds for the future, Alaska can once again be the special, amazing place it should be. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rappaport. We're now going to go to Candy Murr in Big Lake. Candy Murr.
Yes, good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Candy Murr. I'm a caregiver here in Alaska and a homeowner in Big Lake. And I have been in the caretaking field for 50 years and went on to get a degree in the field over 22 years ago. And I want you to support HB 96 and give caregivers the funds that we need to stay in the field that we so dearly love, that is close to our hearts. Most every caregiver I know has two or three jobs because we don't make enough to cover our own basic needs, rent, food, insurance, upkeep on our automobiles, or anything extra. I want to briefly share a story because you've heard so many aspects of this, but I once cared for a veteran who was partially paralyzed, actually one whole side of his body. His wife was developing dementia, and she needed a caretaker also. She had insurance through the Veteran Administration, but she did not, and they couldn't afford it yet. One day, about a year and a half into working with this gentleman that I had come very close to, many members of their family, I was giving him a bath, as I had done every day for such a long time, and all of a sudden, she didn't remember who I was. And to her, I was a woman in her husband's bedroom, and he was naked. She threatened to get a gun and I'll just say she threatened to shoot me. Because of this, of course, I had to immediately leave the home for my safety. And the bottom line is that she should have had a caretaker also, but they couldn't afford it. What ended up happening is he had to be put into a care facility and she had to be taken out from the home and cared for by other family members. So the whole family was broken up. It's now a situation where the state has to pay more to care, to provide care for this family, and it's broken and it'll never be the same. Caregivers face situations like this on a regular basis. The newer caretakers haven't even been trained enough to know how to take care of every client they're sent for. And we don't even have the hours given for each person to take care of all the needs that they may need. And so many of us will clock out, so we're not making any money, but there's no way one of us is going to walk out the door and leave somebody who says, oh my goodness, I now have to use the toilet. So what do? We're off the clock, but we put them on the toilet. Then maybe they have a blowout, so we have to give them a bath. Maybe we have to change their bedding and wash their bedding. Well, you don't just start the washing machine and let the laundry sour when it's over because no one's there to take care of it. So you stay until the bedding is washed and dried and you remade the bed and put everything away. Now you have worked another several hours for free. This is truly my love language, caring for others, or I wouldn't have gone and gotten a degree in this field. Being in this field for this long with the extensive training that I have paid for myself so that I would be the best caretaker possible, we should all be given training. There should be funding for training. HB 96 could provide that, and I would really like to see that supported. And the funds that you have allocated for caregivers, please don't start divvying it up to other things. We can't stay in this field. I'm 66 years old. I'm a great grandmother. I also have a CDL license, and I enjoy that position also. But I can't continue to do all the hours of work I do and not get paid for half of them.
Okay.
And continue at this length, and we need more caregivers coming into the field. They also need to be trained to the level I am,
even though I am highly trained. Can you wrap up your testimony,
and pay for
please?
It myself, as I said. I still get offered caretaking positions for $18 an hour. I just recently got a raise to $21.50, and by now I should be making a whole lot more than that, but the money, each agency gives you whatever they want to,
Ms. Murr,
and keep the rest for themselves.
Ms. Murr.
And I'd like to see that stop. I'd like to see it be even all the way across the board so all the agencies pay us all a fair rate and that our chances for increase go up as we get experiences.
Right. Ms. Murr, thank you for your testimony.
So thank you for your time,
okay.
And thank you for listening, and I hope you continue to support us.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. We're going to go to Sam Garcia in Eagle River.
Hey, good afternoon. This is Sam Garcia. And hold on one second here. I want to thank you for listening to me here today. So I'm in the behavioral health field, and I've been in it for a while now. But I mean, before that, you know, I'm a person in long-term recovery, and you know, I really want to try to get out how important it is to support some of these bills like HB 253 and HB 265. You know, because as a professional, I'm also somebody that has used a lot of these services back when I was going through my own challenges. And, you know, it doesn't happen overnight, and it takes a community, it takes a support. But I know what it looks like, when help is available at the right time, and I also know what it looks like when it isn't. You know, currently we don't have enough crisis support and community treatment options availability to get people in as quickly as needed. And the crises don't stop, right? It's everywhere. It's in emergency rooms, jails, shelters, out in the families. And also I want to ask for support with funding for the crisis call center funding for an additional $500,000 for the UGF. That is a very clear way to help make an impact and reduce harm and save some lives. Give people a chance to be able to call in 24/7 when they're maybe overwhelmed or experiencing suicidal ideation, going through maybe some withdrawals or a mental health crisis. And having support in real time is what we can do to help people before things really start to spiral and end up in more of an emergency circumstance. Second is there's a behavioral health grant that adds another $4.2 million, supports treatment and recovery services as well as prevention and early intervention.
Okay.
Right. And the last thing was the adolescent residential behavioral health treatment. There's another 336 that is supposed to be added. And that's what I have. So I want to thank you for listening to me. And whatever you guys can do to support furthering the behavioral health and crisis grants that are out there right now.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Garcia. We're now going to go to Rachel Blakesley in Anchorage. Or Rochelle. Rochelle or Rachel Blakesley.
Oh, it's Rachel. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Good afternoon. Thank you all for the opportunity to testify today and for all the work that you're doing. My name is Rachel Blakesley, and I live in Anchorage. I'm the parent of two kiddos who also attend the Anchorage School District. And I am calling today to ask the legislature to prioritize education funding in the FY27 operating budget and support a meaningful increase to the base student allocation, including a $630 increase proposed in HB 374. My husband and I made a conscious decision to move our family to Alaska nearly a decade ago. He grew up in Anchorage and benefited from a really strong public education system and a quality of life that was truly unparalleled. And we wanted those same opportunities and style of upbringing for our kids. We've been used to watching families leave because of the ups and downs of oil and gas. But now for the first time, we are watching families leave because of education, which is heartbreaking. In Anchorage, our school district has had to work to address a $90 million projected deficit for next year. And the proposed cuts that they have made so far include dramatically increasing class sizes, eliminating beloved programs, and cutting hundreds of positions. My daughter's principal recently shared that her second grade class next year is projected to have 38 students if nothing changes and we have no increased funding. Our community is crumbling because the state has failed to adequately fund education and failed to listen to parents' pleas for stability in our schools. Public education is a collective promise that we make to the children in our communities. And if we want Alaska to be a place where families choose to live and work and raise their children, we must invest in our schools. I will tell you that I believe in accountability and transparency in how education dollars are spent. And I support ensuring those funds are allocated responsibly and effectively to support strong student outcomes. But accountability goes both ways. It must begin with providing schools the resources they need in the first place. It's impossible to hold schools accountable for outcomes when the funding itself has fallen so far behind. In fact, according to a recent 2025 study from Georgetown University, Alaska ranks last among states in cumulative K-12 per pupil spending relative to inflation over the past 10 years. I'm asking that you please prioritize education in the state budget and support a significant increase to education funding. Thank you for your time and for your service to Alaska's communities and students.
Thank you, Ms. Blakesley. We'll now go to Palmer and Judy Edwards. Ms. Edwards.
Oh, hi, this is Judy Edwards. I'm not exactly prepared to give testimony per se. I want to say that everybody that has already spoken, they have just done such incredible jobs. So I am a mother of a 18-year-old son who is disabled. He's in a wheelchair. He has cerebral palsy. I support infant learning, the special education services, and caregiving services. And I would just like to ask the committee right now, do you have any questions of me about how it is to raise a person with disabilities? Would you like to have a clue at all? Because I'm open to a question if you have one. We will be there next week with Key Campaign, and my son is advocating for height adjustable bathroom tables because I've had to change them on the bathroom floor. So we're making progress, but do you guys have any questions of me as a mom? Chair Josephson?
Yes, I have a question for you, Ms. Edwards. How much time do you get to yourself and for yourself per day? Do you get respite time? Do you get downtime for a walk or your favorite TV show or your favorite hobby? That's my question.
Yeah, you know what? Not that often, to be real honest. I am able to provide 25 hours of care to my son, but I'm here the whole rest of the week. So, no, I don't really get a respite per se. He's allowed to have hours of respite, but nobody wants to do the services for less. So, no, I don't really get a lot of time. But I'm not complaining because my payment is my son, and he's incredible. Do you have anything else? That was a wonderful question. Thank you. Chair Josephson?
Sure. There may be another question.
Can you
question.
Hear me okay?
Yeah, there's another. Yes, we can hear you fine. Rep. Hannon of Juneau may have a question for you.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. It's actually just an acknowledgement and a thank you, Mrs. Edwards, for your continued advocacy for Universal Changing Station. As you know, we now have one in the Capitol building here in Juneau, and I believe you're participating in a ribbon-cutting ceremony because you've been a relentless advocate to try and make them possible, and it's not perfect, and it's not pretty, but it is functional, and we believe we are the only one here in the Capitol City, and it will see a lot of use over the in the near future. So thank you for your continued advocacy for those.
Thank you. And I can't thank you enough. I hope we get to meet in person because, yes, Eric is going to take part in the ribbon cutting. He also wants to show off his new driving skills. He's able to use his wheelchair as power, and he uses his eyes through his communication device to not only talk but to also drive his chair. So he wants to show off to you guys.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Edwards, for your testimony. We'll now go to Samantha Sawyer and Wasilla.
They're not hearing us. Hi, my name is Samantha Sawyer. I've been a caregiver for about 10 years now, and I'm advocating to secure money in the budget for caregivers. Caregiving makes up a lot of our community. When I started about 10 years ago, I realized after getting this job that I will go into the store and I'll see like multiple other caregivers and people who need care. And that's something that's never going to end. I see it as something very high on the priority list of where our investments should be going for our community. And as you all know, communities are made up of people. And that's what caregiving is directly about, and it does have a ripple effect into the ethics of how our community is ran because it directly affects people, which has a ripple effect not only to the caregivers and the clients themselves, but also to the caregiver's family and the client's family and the people that they know. And caregiving is a wide umbrella. It will take people out into the community or help people within their homes or help people get a
an assisted living home if need be, and it will even help people get jobs. And I see it as something that is definitely beneficial and a high priority for our community. So I'm just asking that we keep that as a high priority and maintain the security of our budget in the system.
Thank you, Ms. Sawyer. We're now going to go to Elizabeth Karenick Johnson in Nome. Ms. Karenick Johnson. Ms. Karenick Johnson.
Hello, this is Elizabeth Karenick Johnson. Can you hear me?
Yes. But don't speak any more meekly than that.
Okay. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I am Elizabeth Karenick Johnson, Assistant Superintendent and HR Director for Nome Public Schools, and 43-year Nome resident. I'm testifying today in support of the $490,000 included in the education budget to support the efforts to retain and recruit teachers of the Alaska Council of School Administrators, ACSA, through the work of the Alaska Educator Retention and Recruitment Center, or ARC. As a small district with a single individual to handle all human resources tasks regarding recruiting, hiring, and onboarding, as well as the other HR responsibilities, the support of this high-quality statewide professional entity is crucial. As we are all sadly aware, the number of high-quality educators available to Alaska schools has dwindled. We continue to search for domestic candidates and have also broadened our hiring pools to include international candidates. ARC helps districts to search for candidates both domestically and internationally by hosting the new online job board and having formed a system of support for handling the complicated steps associated with international hiring. Until last month, those were items I was tackling on my own with the assistance of an outside legal firm. Now I'm able to rely on ARC to ensure those tasks are completed effectively and efficiently, along with many other related services for which I was previously responsible. This has freed much of my time to support domestic candidates and current staff. Beyond recruiting services, ACSA and ARC do an immense amount of work to support current educators throughout our state. I've had the privilege to benefit directly from their Alaska School Leadership Academy, including principal mentorship, as well as the new and aspiring superintendent mentorship they provide. Additionally, I have benefited from ongoing professional development for school and district leaders provided by ARC. I believe these supports have been an enormous contribution to my continued work and success as an administrator in my home community. Please keep true to the $490,000 listed in the education budget for the valuable services provided to all Alaska districts by ACSA and ARC. Thank you.
Thank you, Assistant Superintendent. We're now going to go to Mike Coons and Wasilla. Mr. Coons.
Josephson, this is Mike Coons.
Yes.
Yeah, here, Josephson, this is Mike Coons calling from Wasilla, and I'm speaking for myself.
Okay.
I've been sitting here listening. You know, I haven't heard one person bring up the PFD that you guys in the House Finance zeroed out. But I will give you credit. At least you socialists are now telling us that you care less about the citizens of Alaska and blatantly stealing from the PFD. Your continued attempts and theft of the CBR, the gutting of the SBR. You and the majority are thieves, and I do hope this November we toss you out. Too bad that isn't tossing into jail for the theft and robbery of the people of Alaska. No more increased money for education, increasing BSA, until we are no longer in the bottom of the nation, and that we can show that our kids are now educated to at least the top 20 in the nation. The education budget is a joke and a lie. It goes to the unions, administration, not to the kids. We need to demand accountability of teachers who teach DEI, CRT, at LGBTQ versus reading, writing, and arithmetic. Those school boards that push woke, like in Anchorage, must be defunded. And I call the President of the United States to do just that. Lastly, cut SNAP and Medicaid by defunding those who are able to work and refuse to work. Thank you. Have a good day.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Coons. We'll now go to Stephanie Pucker in Wasilla. Ms. Pucker. Stephanie Pucker in Wasilla. Okay. We'll now go to Gail Coons in Wasilla. Gail Coons. Gail Coons.
Excuse me. Just a minute. I was multitasking. Okay. My name's Gail Coons, and thank you for allowing me to testify today. This is on HB 96 and the caregivers increase. My testimony comes from experience. My focus is about the training of the caregivers and the agencies. In 2003, after moving back to Alaska, I decided to open my own healthcare agency. And so while writing my business plan, I got my CNA license and worked in the field for over a year because I needed to know what was going on out there. And it was a real eye-opener. And after a year, I decided that wasn't the business for me. There's some very kind and caring and experienced caregivers out there. One of your problems that should be paid and should be paid more money than what they're making now, in which I agree. It's kind of a difficult profession to police out there with the way it works. One of my problems is the agencies. There is all different kinds of the wages that they pay for different types of disabilities. And I understand you need some of that, but what they're paying back and kicking back to the actual caregiver, because I have the figures on these, is quite small in comparison. These agencies take their new hires and they take them in, set them down at a computer, and they feed them different things to watch. And at the end of the day, then they're ready to go out and care for people. They've had absolutely no other training than that. They don't know how to move, how to lift. They expect, and by the state's rules, they expect that the clients are supposed to teach all of them this. There are felons that are hired out of these agencies. I had one. They sent me once. And bless this young woman for going out and trying to work. They sent me a woman who was autistic, blind in one eye, and didn't drive. How can you possibly do a job and when you're supposed to do grocery shopping, you know, so you can't drive? Or if on the days I needed help going to the doctor, she couldn't do that. And these agencies are sending them out. You are paying them a lot of money to manage the caregivers. That money somehow should be filtering down to these caregivers. You also have care coordinators that are still working on the COVID, and they're getting paid $300 a client plus a month. They're calling their clients, talking to them for maybe 5 minutes, hanging the phone up, and they're not doing a home visit. And you're all allowing this. And they're spending 10 minutes a month for the kind of money that you are paying them a month. That money could be filtered down to some of these caregivers. It really needs to be addressed. They almost feel, and I've talked to every single agency, when my parents were aging and possibly needing help,
I use the agencies on and off depending on my health and how it was going. But, and like I said, there's some beautiful people out there that do this business and they should be paid. But you've got some real problems starting at the agencies. And I thank you for listening today. And I hope somebody takes some of this information and maybe looks into it, because it is a problem out there.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Coons, for your testimony. I'm going to just make sure that Crystal Howard, who called in 2 hours ago, I called her name and she did not respond. I'm assuming that she's gone, although it doesn't say.
No, I'm here.
All right, Ms. Howard, this is Andy Josephson here with the Finance Committee in Juneau. Apologies for your waiting so long. We called your name and waited for some time earlier this afternoon.
Yeah, I understand. I'm having terrible service.
That's all right. Please give us your testimony.
Thank you. So you can hear me?
Yes, very well. Go ahead.
Okay, perfect. My name is Crystal Howard, and I'm a caregiver for Mozilla, and I have lived on literally every side of caregiving as a parent, as a professional, as someone navigating the system for my own family members. I've cared from birth to hospice to children with autism spectrum disorder to adults with quadriplegia, dementia, and everything in between, and I know what it takes to be present and to sacrifice. Before this work, I was a nursing assistant for 10 years, and it taught me something really important. The time that I spent with the patient was so important to the doctors, because the doctors came to me for face-to-face interactions on how the patients were doing. We provide a connection that can't be replaced. I also raised my kids while doing this work, and it wasn't easy. The wages in this field have been stagnant for a very long time, and my family shouldn't have to suffer for me to follow my passions. As caregivers, we show up for people because we care and because they depend on us. We work holidays, our birthdays, even our children's birthdays and school events. Most of the time we can't call in sick because there isn't anybody to cover. Most of the time we don't take vacations because we put our every need aside to make sure that the people that we care for are taken care of. The work is unstable. Our clients aren't lifelong. They pass on. Their needs change. Funds shift. And hours are inconsistent, and there's no growth, and there's no upward mobility. Again, I have been doing this for the entirety of my adult life, and I'm probably making $5 more an hour than I was 15, 20 years ago. This is why recent funding matters so much. 14 years ago, I cared for my own son, who was so ill that he received a make-a-wish. I couldn't care for him if I worked. So I couldn't work. I couldn't do anything. I could only care for him and rely on my family. There wasn't anything in place at that time. The stress compounds, and the fewer caregivers that we have, the harder it is for all of us to breathe. It's not just about missing breaks. It's about people losing their families, families being stretched, and people being left without support. I stayed in this work because caring for community is who I am, but caregivers are leaving simply because they can't afford to stay. People we care for deserve stability, dignity, and face-to-face care. And the money directly affects the lives of people across Alaska and the people that rely on us every single day. We give up a lot to do this. We are here for the least of us, not because of law or religion, because it's the right thing to do. And we should make it easier for people to make that decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Howard. For the committee's information, I see seven more callers and one person in our gallery who would like to testify. So we're going to go to Nancy Pilfrey in Wasilla.
Hi, I'm Nancy Pilfrey. I live in Wasilla, Alaska. I'm speaking in regards to HB 96 caregiving. I have experience in both paid and unpaid caregiving throughout my life in Alaska and the lower 48. I am the owner administrator for an assisted living home in Anchorage, Alaska since September 2016. Additionally, I was employed for several years as a caregiver through Consumer Direct here at Wasilla. I request to the lawmakers keep the additional money in the budget for care because of the increase of
senior population in all ages needing care. Our professional workers need adequate wages to support their families and ensure a stable workforce with less turnover. Thank you, committee and chair, for hearing me today, and I wish you a happy Friday the 13th.
Thank you. That was Ms. Pelfrey, is that right?
Pelfrey.
Got it. All right, so now we'll go to Kim Anderson in Anchorage.
Hello. Hi, my name is Kim Anderson. I'm from Anchorage, Alaska. I've been a caregiver for about 20-plus years, and I am testifying today because the money that's in the system right now, I'm just asking that you guys keep the additional money in the budget for care system, and mainly to go towards the caregivers. I have clients that are very close to me. I have a family member that I care for, and I also have another client that needs almost 24-hour care. And the pay, I care for them because I really love them and I care for them. But I've had to work a second job just to be able to maintain my bills. As we all know, the economy is increasing, prices are going up, and we have to have better pay to be able to pay our bills and to be able to keep a stable home. And I'm just leaning on you guys to make the system better, and not just for the caregivers, but also for our clients as well, because they deserve that care because they can't care for themselves. They rely on us. So that's really all that I have to say. I'm very emotional about it. I just hope that you guys do your job and do it where it benefits the community.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. We're now going to Heidi Hill with the Abused Women's Aid in Crisis. Ms. Hill.
Hello. Thank you for taking the time to listen to our testimony. Yes, my name is Heidi Hill. I am the Strategy and Operations Director with Abused Women's Aid in Crisis, or AWAKE. And I want to thank the DPS Finance Subcommittee for adding increased funds to the CDBSA grants line. And I want to ask the full Finance Committee to keep those additions in the budget. It's really, really important to agencies like AWAKE. These funds help so many people in a state with very, very high rates of domestic violence and sexual assault. I'm sure you've all heard the stats that at least half of the women in Alaska, also in Anchorage specifically, will be victims of sexual and domestic violence in their lifetime. And that's a huge number of people. AWAKE has a 67-bed shelter, and we are pretty much always full. At any given time, about a third to a half of our population are children who have seen some pretty terrible things in their homes. And every year in our shelter, in our emergency shelter, we help approximately 1,000 people. And CDBSA funding goes to help them with a wide variety of needs. We feed everyone who comes into the shelter. We can transport them. We can buy hygiene items, meet those very, very basic needs that they have when they come here from a dangerous situation. Just this morning, I was speaking to a woman who had fled with nothing. She's very badly injured, but we are able to give her a safe bed. We can give her clothing. We can feed her. We can help her get to those appointments with the hospital that she's going to be having, and with law enforcement. And that's very common with the people that we serve. They very often flee all hours of the day and night with nothing. And CDBSA is critical for us to be able to meet the needs that they do have. And the last thing I wanted to note was that CDBSA has had many years of flat funding, and with the increased cost that we see in everything that we've been providing to the people that we serve, it almost functions like a cut because everything has become so expensive. And so I just want to say again how critical CDBSA funding is to victim service agencies in our state, and thank you so much for your time
I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Ms. Hill. Thank you for your testimony and your work. We're down to four telephoners. We're going to hear from Suki Miller now. Ms. Miller.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead, Ms. Miller.
Yep. Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Suki Miller, and I'm the Executive Director for Victims for Justice. I wanted to thank you for the additions recommended from the BPS subcommittee, the CDVSA funding, as well as the state funding for the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. Victims for Justice is the only organization in the state that provides services to victims of other violent crimes for over 40 years. We help innocent victims of violent crimes such as assault, robbery, arson, and the surviving family members of homicide victims. Financial assistance is crucial for crime victims and helps them recover from the emotional and physical impact of crime. Imagine having your partner get murdered and they were the main financial provider, and you have kids. Think about how many reoccurring charges you have, Netflix, cell phone bill, mortgage, car payments, daycare, and now you have no idea how you are going to make ends meet. Or imagine waking up to your home ablaze because someone intentionally set it on fire. You went to bed living in one world and woke up with almost nothing. You may have had to jump out the window and broken an arm or a leg or maybe both. This is what crime victims are facing, and then they're thrown into the criminal legal proceedings. Providing financial assistance to the innocent victims of crime is imperative. It helps stabilize them. It often helps them from becoming homeless, and it helps them be able to heal and participate in the criminal justice system, improving outcomes. The Violent Crimes Compensation Board provides financial assistance to victims of violent crime that is desperately needed. In addition, the VCCB is reimbursed 75 cents to the dollar. Giving state dollars to victims this year will allow federal dollars to be available to crime victims in future years. Thank you for working to stabilize the funding available for distribution to victims. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Miller, and for your work. We appreciate your time and testimony. We'll now go to Debbie Mulholland in Anchorage. Ms. Mulholland. Debbie Mulholland.
Yes, sir, I'm sorry. This is Debbie Mulholland. I apologize. I forgot to take it off mute on my side. I am in Anchorage, Alaska. I am a former caregiver. I retired 4 years ago. But every day I see it's more vital that we have money in the budget for caregivers. There aren't enough caregivers. There are too many people that need help. And if those caregivers aren't there, I know that there are people that if a caregiver doesn't go in, they don't see anybody else all week. They might see a caregiver coming 3 days a week or 2 days a week, and that person is alone the rest of the time. I also know that there are parents who are raising disabled children who are fighting to get funds because it's a really hard job, and there are things that they need for their children that they can't just go buy at a store, and they're charging exorbitant amount of prices or can't even get them. I just want to say that I support 1896. I support the fact that caregivers should be getting 70 cents out of every dollar. They're the ones doing the work. I also support the fact that training is necessary, not just something on a computer, but training where you actually work with people and you handle them instead of just people going, I know how to do that. It worries me when I see somebody trying to get somebody into a car or the walker's the wrong height and I don't even do the job anymore. I really appreciate you letting me speak. I know it's been a long afternoon for you, ladies and gentlemen, but thank you for letting me speak my piece. And please, please, please put more money in the budget for caregivers and build that advisory board. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Mulholland. Good to see you recently. Let's go on now to Mr. Mike Bronson. Mike Bronson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hi, I'm Mike Bronson calling from Spinard in Anchorage. I'm the father of two daughters who graduated from West High School. Thank you for keeping school funding as your top priority in the legislature. I appreciate that. I encourage the Finance Committee to incorporate the fiscal note you'll see in House Bill 374 for a $630 state student allocation bump up. That would let schools hire up to 1,000 more teachers, let them drive down class sizes, and it would recover much of the student proficiency that's been lost across the state over the last 15 years. In my written testimony I sent to you a little while ago, you'll see data that shows Alaska is now sitting in last place among the 50 states when it comes to funding growth for K-12 schools. Alaska now ranks last behind all the other states for school funding growth in nominal dollars since 2013, if you believe the Georgetown University report from last year. House Bill 374's fiscal note gives you a big opportunity for the legislature to meet the Constitution and a step towards smaller class sizes, better maintained schools, and better student proficiency. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bronson. I suspect we'll see you tomorrow in Anchorage. We'll now go to Keely Olson, our last caller. Keely Olson.
Hello, my name is Keely Olson. Thank you so much for your hard work. I wanted to call in to thank Representative Jimmy and the DPS subcommittee for their work in increasing funds to the CDBSA grants line to include $1.2 million for victim services and $500,000 for civil legal assistance to individuals and families impacted by sexual trauma and domestic violence. I would also point out that there is a VCCB grant line increase and funding for children's advocacy centers for the investigation of child abuse and maltreatment was also recommended. Victim services throughout the state have been flat funded since 2017. In the same span of time, the cost of living has increased by 24%. The hourly wages we can afford to pay our staff at STAR are significantly lower than what would be considered a living wage. Meanwhile, during the same time period, STAR's demand for services has increased significantly, as has the cost of living. Our community response. Most people may not realize that we respond to every investigation of sexual assault in Anchorage. So we respond with law enforcement and forensic nurses. Those urgent cases that are seen where clothing is taken and physical evidence is collected, we pay for replacing all of their needs. Those call-outs, we had 402 last year, so that's, you know, an average of more than one a day. Each one of those averages about 8 hours. We have had, we served an additional 100 people who were not reporting to law enforcement within that 7-day time frame. We provided presentations to 748 adults on prevention and education, and served over 3,000 youth with prevention education last year alone. So I really want to ask that the full finance committee maintain those changes in the budget line items, and really want to thank you for all of your hard work. I know you've had a long day. I won't keep you any longer. Appreciate you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Olson. You do mighty important work, and we appreciate it. No, it's not easy. Our last testifier has asked to testify. She testified on behalf of a nonprofit and has asked to testify in her individual capacity. So I would invite Caroline Storm to come forward. She will, for the record, be somewhere around our 50th testifier of the day. Ms. Storm.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, and thank you to this committee for the grace to let me testify again. My name is Caroline Storm. I am testifying for myself as a 24-year resident of Alaska and a mother of a son who went to Anchorage School District and Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. We have not funded public education to keep up with inflation since 2013. It is a myth that our schools are getting enough funding. We are the only state, except for Wyoming, that has not funded public education to keep up with inflation. Iowa, Montana, Nebraska have at least kept pace with inflation, and Mississippi, which we has come up quite often in discussions about outcomes, has funded closer to 60% of inflation. Inflation sits at 35%. So Mississippi is funding higher than inflation, and their outcomes have improved significantly. We have been asking for increased public education funding for well over a decade, and I think it's time that this body really recognizes that we need to do something to keep families in Alaska, and that means a well-funded public education system, which is your constitutional obligation. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Storm. So that was 2 hours and 15 minutes of testimony. We heard from quite a few caretakers. That concludes our business for today. Our next House Finance Committee meeting is scheduled for Monday, March 16th at 9 a.m. At that meeting, a schedule is principally SB 64 elections. I presume we're going to have a yet another CS and sort of a last chance, I suspect. The director, Ms. Beecher, noted that she would be, I think, telephonic for that meeting. At any rate, otherwise, check your calendar for next week's hearings. And so with that, at 3:45 p.m., Friday, March 13th, we'll adjourn House Finance. We're adjourned.